The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol. We'll be hearing from Ali Moreno later on Spain, Portugal and Argentina against Chile. But we now will be welcoming in Hercules Gomez to talk about the USA's game against Honduras that we witnessed last night. Thank you so much for joining us, Herc. Let's just take a look back at the starting 11 and some of the stats as well. In this game, it finished 1-0 to the USA. They had their stars back from Europe. It was a strong side that was put out there, not without its struggles, though. What did you make of their performance, Herc?
Underwhelming. Very underwhelming, Kay, Steve. If we look at the starting lineup, a few questions. Yunus Musa didn't play. It was Sebastian Legette, Jackson Ewell. Tyler Adams still not back from fitness concerns. That back still bothering him. We're going to see if they can get him back for what is the final. But that's a big, big player missing right there. His ability to cover ground, his ability to protect that center back line, or the center back pairing, I should say. When the U.S. presses so high up the field against an opponent, they leave themselves so exposed in what is defensive transition. We saw it against Switzerland. It was Sergiño Dest who was on the receiving end of the Swiss attack just time after time. Well, it's a little bit of the same. It's still a lot of those problems resurfacing in what is that transition. You have strings of good play, but overall don't really put the ball in the net when they should put in the ball in the back of the net, make the game more difficult than it has to be. A lot of questions being asked of, honestly, this midfield, and we should be calm about things. I don't want to overreact because missing a player like Tyler Adams, who for my liking is the leader of this team, is going to hurt. Not having a Christian Pulisic more on the ball and more into his game, that's going to hurt. The transatlantic flight to come into altitude in what is Denver against a very difficult CONCACAF opponent. And what I mean by that is we saw the tricks. We saw the opponent and how they were going to play. We saw the physicality of the game. These are still things that this very young team is getting used to.
So a lack of cohesion in their play then, Herc. Do you think that's a familiarity thing? Or is there a problem there? Is it something deeper?
Yeah, familiarity for sure. Steve could attest to this. Anytime you try working with the team when it comes to defensive structure, defensive tactics, forget about the offensive side of things because individually they can get themselves out of problems. But defensively as a unit, it's going to take time. And what was Switzerland and this semifinal and the final, they're going to mimic what are these World Cup qualifiers in the three-game windows that you will have, a game every 4 days. You're going to get this type of atmosphere. It was in Denver, Colorado, yes, but still against a CONCACAF opponent in the CONCACAF ways. They're very gritty performances. They're very up-and-down type of play. Very rarely can you get in a good shift where it's good strings of possession, where it's good pattern play. Sometimes it's roll up those sleeves. Sometimes it's fight. Sometimes it's grind out those results, which in the last qualifying campaign was the issue. You didn't win the games you're supposed to win, the home games. And you didn't steal points like you normally do on the road. Well, Greg Berhalter is going to have to teach this team how to grit out these wins, how to grind out this type of play. It's not always going to be pretty because as we saw with Mexico, Costa Rica, it won't always be like that. But for the U.S. men's national team, underwhelming in the principles. And I mean that because Greg's had enough time where we can see a DNA going forward and at least some sort of structure where if one or two players are missing, you can still fill those gaps, fill those holes, and you're not as exposed.
How hard is it, Stevie, when you come to play with the national side and you've not been together for a while, you're in a different place?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. It certainly doesn't help that you're playing at altitude. It doesn't help that, you know, you probably haven't played for two, three, some players maybe even 4 weeks. So that is a little bit of an excuse for the players. However, we're talking about a team that can't possess the ball properly. That's their biggest problem. And not only on the attacking side, but from a defensive point of view. You know, Herc's talking about the fact that Tyler Adams was missing. Well, the reason he's a big miss is because he smells danger. He smells a bad pass. You know, when you're going forward and you're not passing the ball to your teammate particularly well and it breaks down, then everybody around you has to understand that that's a bad pass, and the possibility of losing the ball means I have to take a step back. Because Berhalter wants them to play open attack in football, which we all do. But when you open up, you have to be able to sense when there's a bit of danger or sense when you're going to lose the ball, and then you take a step back. And that means that you can defend as a unit. They don't do that. They certainly didn't do it in this game. And it kind of exposed both Brooks and McKenzie for me.
OK, well, we'll check out how they're looking against Mexico, who will be their opponents in the final of the CONCACAF Nations League. They played Costa Rica. The game finished goalless. Mexico won on penalties, and now all eyes on Sunday's game. It's the final of the first CONCACAF Nations League. There's quite a few questions I have here for you, Hercules Gomez. Starting with Chicharito, player of the month in MLS, but not in the squad here. Is there something more to this than meets the eye?
There's a lot more than meets the eye. Nobody knows what it is. They won't pinpoint it. There are lots of rumors going around that he's being blacklisted from what is the Mexican Federation, the Mexican national team. He had some disciplinary issues, and the last time he was there, though, Tata Martino himself said that's not the issue. Tata Martino himself said, I have spoken to Javier Hernandez, to Chicharito. He knows that he's still in our plans if he keeps doing what he's doing. But there's a strong sense of belief within at least the press in Mexico that Javier Hernandez will never play again with the Mexican national team. And that is baffling because Raul Jimenez is such an important part of that team. Raul Jimenez was almost 70% of their offensive play in the last 2 years. Raul Jimenez, well, since that injury in late November against Arsenal and David Luiz, hasn't appeared in what is first-team football, whether that's club or country. So now there's no Raul Jimenez in the picture. You've got Henry Martin, who's not a proven commodity within the Mexican national team. You've got Alan Pulido, who, yes, he has good spurts, but really hasn't played in a convincing fashion for you to forget about the likes of Raul Jimenez and certainly the likes of Javier Hernandez, who's the leading goal scorer in their history. So far, we've seen Tata Martino even come to a Rodolfo Pizarro as a false nine, a Chucky Lozano, who's obviously their most dangerous player. Chucky Lozano in the last four games, he's the only person that scored. He's got 3 goals in 4 games. He's the only person that scored since the restart from the pandemic. This all of a sudden, one's power in what was offensive, you know, pro playing what is the sides or from the flanks, I should say, you know, possession-based football, all of a sudden is very toothless. And that is scary for Tata Martino so much that yesterday we saw a 5-man back line that he never does. We saw Antuna on the right that Antuna's never played as a wingback. He seems to be grasping at straws trying to find solution for this 9 situation. Javier Hernandez happens to be that solution. Javier Hernandez is 33 years of age. Your all-time leading goal scorer has scored in every competition Mexico's ever played in with him in a uniform and also leads Major League Soccer in goals, 7 goals in 7 games. I don't see what the issue is here. I don't see why he's not part of this team.
Yeah, so definitely a few questions to be answered, and perhaps we will see what the answers could be in this final coming up. United States against Mexico, that is on Sunday. Of course, always a very interesting one to watch. Herc, how do you see it going?
That's going to be an interesting final because all of a sudden we're seeing a Mexico team that isn't convincing on the offensive foot, but they're still a very strong transition team. That's their forte. That's their strength, how they play on the break, how they can expose teams with how vertical and how fast they are. But then we see a U.S. men's national team that all of a sudden in the last 4 games, they've won 3, but none of them have been really convincing on the defensive front. And every game that they even won, there are always questions asked defensively and in transition. It's when we press high as a unit, can we not expose ourselves when we lose the ball? So this is a very, very interesting game for me because off both performances last night, Honduras, USA, and what was Mexico, Costa Rica, I'm not convinced there's a clear-cut favorite in this game. But Mexico does have the advantage that they're just the better team on paper today. Team, not individuals, team. They have better team performances. They have more marquee games. They've got players who aren't promising, who aren't for the future. They are today. Mexico is a must-win today type of team. Whereas we're looking at this U.S. men's national team as further down the road are going to be able to accomplish something. So I give the slight edge to Mexico, but I still think it's going to be a very contested game, as they usually are. But I think Mexico should have the upper hand here.
Stevie, what do you think? Would you care to give us a prediction?
I am going to go, and I'm going to say that the U.S. wins this. You know, if Mexico want to sit in and give Pulisic the ball and Reina the ball, then I think they're going to be asking for trouble. And Hert's been talking about it. Going forward, it's one thing to be good on the break and be quick, But if you're not clinical, then it adds up to nothing. So I'm going to stick my neck out here and say that the US takes it.
OK, well, that is it for this from Herc. You can hear more from him, though, on Football Americas. Make sure you do that new episode streaming weekly. Next one will be with you on Monday for much more talk on all the teams in the Americas. We thank him for joining us. Stevie will be back and Alejandro Moreno up next to talk Argentina-Chile. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Moving on to CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, these are the scores. Argentina 1-1 against Chile. Lionel Messi on the score sheet there, goalless between Uruguay and Paraguay. Bolivia overcoming a major goalkeeping error to grab a 3-1 win over Venezuela. Colombia getting the Ronaldo Rueda era off to a good start with a 3-0 win over Peru, and Brazil and Ecuador still to play. Well, ahead of the Argentina game, the statue of Diego Maradona was unveiled. It was the first time that Argentina have met since his passing, and this statue to pay tribute to him. Lionel Messi, ahead of the game, had said it was a very special game because it was the first without Diego. We know what the national team meant for him. Even when he wasn't present at the stadium, he was always supporting us. We wanted to give him the victory and represent Argentina as he always did. Well, unfortunately, they didn't get to give him the victory. Lionel Messi did score, though, although Claudio Bravo had a big say in them not getting that win.
Yes, he did. And whatever chances Argentina created, no surprise, it came from Lionel Messi. Now, what's frustrating about Argentina is that it's not like it was a bunch of chances. Yeah, Claudio Bravo made a couple of saves, but saves that you expect him to make. And if it's not coming from Lionel Messi, much like it happens with Barcelona at times, it doesn't seem like it's happening at all for Argentina. It doesn't feel like there's somebody else that can create for himself. And it wasn't until late in the match when Lionel Messi kind of threw himself to the right-hand side and was isolated in 1v1 situations. And then he sort of started saying, okay, well, I'm going to take this guy to the inside. I'm going to find this shot to the far post. Claudio Bravo was making the save. But in order for him to have the freedom to throw himself into that part of the field, there has to be creativity coming from somewhere else, because otherwise what happens is if he throws himself out there, then there's nobody providing service. If he throws himself to the middle to provide service, then there's nobody to provide the service to, because everybody else is just kind of watching Lionel Messi play. Lautaro Martinez was somewhat active. Some of the changes at halftime actually made a difference for Argentina, and the fact that Angel Correa came on, I thought that was something different for Argentina, because then he was working the spaces underneath and he was working the spaces in the middle and allowed Messi to go and throw himself out in the right-hand side. Overall, I just think Argentina is too slow with the possession, becomes too predictable in the attack, and Chile did just enough to defend Argentina well enough to keep this at 1-1.
So are Argentina going to have some of the same old problems when it comes to the major tournaments?
Well, I just don't know who else is going to walk through that door. I mean, the talent is there, at least on paper, and you see the sort of season that Angel Di Maria has had with PSG, and you think, okay, well, maybe he gives them something different, maybe a different version of Angel Di Maria, but not quite what you wanted from him, and so he's taken off the field. Angel Correa comes in, did make a difference, but in the end, sadly for Argentina, and predictably for Argentina, is we're going to give it to Messi and see if he can figure it out. And so if Claudio Bravo comes up with a save or the next goalkeeper comes up with a save against Lionel Messi, then the games will remain 1-1, 0-0, and what have you. This is not an explosive team. And when you think about how difficult it is to qualify in CONMEBOL, well, at some point you have to find a rhythm in an additional options. And we just don't have that from Argentina. It's Lionel Messi's show, and then everybody else just kind of waiting for him to do something.
Yeah, well, obviously, as you mentioned, so tough, these qualifiers. These are the standings as it is. That was match day 7, but obviously there was that round that was missed in March. It's been postponed, so it was essentially like match day 5. Argentina's still up the top there. They can be leapfrogged by Ecuador, who will be in action against Brazil at the time of recording. Those two still to play. So they're still not in a bad position at this stage, Ale.
No, and when I say what I'm saying about Argentina, I'm just telling you, I watch a team play that I think could be better, should be better, and yet become predictable. However, the early returns in this very early CONMEBOL qualifying campaign has been very positive. But the difference between Argentina and Colombia is not that much. And so now you go and play Colombia. In Colombia. Okay. What if you lose that game? Now, that difference that we're talking about is only 2 points. And that's exactly the larger picture here in CONMEBOL, is that a couple of results go your way or go against you, and now you're sort of chasing points somewhere else. You do not want to be in a position where this becomes stressful if you're Argentina. Colombia now playing a lot better. Obviously, this result against Peru will help, and they'll feel like they're very confident against Peru. I mean, against Argentina coming up, and that, I think, it's going to create problems for Argentina. Argentina should be comfortable in the CONMEBOL qualifiers, and yet they're not. And part of that reason is because they're very predictable in the attack.
Yeah, as you mentioned, always surprises in this World Cup qualifiers. When it comes to South America, which of the big teams do you think are in danger of not getting through?
Well, I wouldn't say a big team, but Peru, who made it to the last World Cup in 2018, they're going to be on the outside looking in. And should we be surprised? I'm not sure. I don't know that I'm going to sit here and make an argument for Peru that they're one of the big teams in CONMEBOL, but they should be better than where they are in the standings. Chile is in trouble. And it was an important result for Chile against Argentina, but it was a necessary result given the fact that they've had a slow start to CONMEBOL. The other thing I would say about Chile is that they're going through a process right now in which the older guys and the younger guys are not quite matching up, and there seems to be a gap between the two. And while you have the generation of Arturo Vidal and Alexis Sanchez, you're thinking, okay, well, these are the guys that are going to carry you forward. But are they? Should they? Or should there be younger players stepping in and taking those positions? They're sort of finding themselves in a position in which they're transitioning into a younger team, but those younger players are not quite good enough right now. And so you're still depending on Alexis Sanchez, as they did yesterday.
Plenty more twists and turns to come, as there always are in the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying games. For more content, you should subscribe to our YouTube ESPN FC page. You can hear much more from Ale and the rest of the team. So if you haven't done that, make sure you go and do it now. Friendly action, Spain faced Portugal. I'd like to say it was an Iberian delight. Maybe it was more of an Iberian affair. 0-0 it finished. Spain with most of the possession, as is usually the case, but no goals. Not that they didn't have their chances, though. Alejandro Moreno joining us now. I think you might have something to say about Alvaro Morata.
Oh. Well, I'm not surprised. This is not like I'm watching this game and I'm thinking, well, Morata's going to score a bunch of goals for Spain and they're going to win the Euros because of Alvaro Morata. No. Here's the reality for Spain and Alvaro Morata. Had he been a part of the teams from 2008 to 2012, one of the glory days of the Spanish national team, Euros, World Cup, Euro champions, he would have been a part-time kind of the sort of guy that comes off the bench late to give a breather to Fernando Torres or David Villa. Maybe he scores a goal here and there. Would have been a nice piece to have, but not the guy. In this version of Spain, he is the guy who has the responsibility of scoring the goals. And based on today's evidence, and really the evidence that we have seen over the course of his career, Alvaro Morata, again, a good player, but not elite, not the sort of goal scorer that you need in order to be a real contender to win a title like the Euros. He had chance after chance after chance, certainly in the second half. In the second half, there was a sequence in which he had a double chance with his right foot and his left foot. The right foot was a miss hit. It bounces back to him, hits it with his left foot, puts it out wide. And just when you thought, okay, here's the moment when you get to shine, when you can put all those doubts behind you, now it breaks open, breakaway, 1v1, him and Rui Patricio, late in the match, off the crossbar, and out. Now, some people would say that's unfortunate. I would suggest if you're going to win the Euros, if you're going to win a tournament like this, you have to have guys like Karim Benzema, like Harry Kane, Romelu Lukaku, the sort of players that will put away most of these chances. Spain does not have this player, and for as many chances as they created today, this is what I fear Spain is going to be in the Euros. They'll create opportunities, but those opportunities will not be put away, and the few opportunities that they create will not be taken advantage of. Most of all, what I fear most for Spain is that they'll get to the attacking half, to the final third, they'll build all that possession, they'll get to that point, and now they turn right back around and recirculate the ball over to the other side. It's sideways back, eventually they create a chance, and who's gonna take advantage of that chance? Alvaro Morata? I don't think he's consistent enough to allow Spain to be the best version of themselves.
On the other side, it was Portugal with no goals themselves, but this is a golden generation of players. Fernando Santos, obviously you have to give him so much credit for the silverware that he delivered to this team, but is he the right manager for a team of this talent?
And as disappointed as I sounded and was about Alvaro Morata and his inability to take advantage of the opportunities, I was even more disappointed with Portugal. Because you just mentioned it, there is a lot of talent in this team, a lot of attacking talent. This is not 2016 Portugal, and yet in the first half, might as well have been 2016 Portugal. They were defending in their own half, well deep in their own half, and then going from counterattacks where Renato Sanchez just kind of runs with the ball and hopes that he finds Cristiano Ronaldo, and then Ronaldo does something, they win the game 1-0, and that's it. I'm thinking, and I think most people are thinking, this is a better version of Portugal. This is a more attacking version of Portugal, more talented version of Portugal, expecting so much more than just sitting behind the ball and defending. I hope that this was just this game, and then as the Euros come around, that they're willing to go and attack other teams. I don't think that you can just sit and absorb pressure against France and Germany and expect to do well in this tournament. This team should be more of a proactive group, a team that is willing to go and attack people and create problems for people and go and challenge in the attacking half. That didn't happen today. I certainly hope that that's just because this is the first game, they're getting together, everybody getting a feel for each other, not all the players were on the field, and it's not a sign of what this team will be in the Euros.
Okay, well, you can listen to us on the ESPN FC podcast. More takes like this, make sure to download it. It is available every single day, wherever you get your podcasts. Euro 2020 kicks off on June 11th with Turkey against Italy. You'll be able to catch every game live here on ESPN, including preview shows, post-match analysis, digital content, and much more. And plenty of friendly action to catch across the weekend on ESPN Plus. The build-up to Euro 2020 is well underway, and this is the best way to take a look at how some of the teams are shaping up heading into it. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Big result for Italy in friendly action against the Czech Republic. It's all been very positive under Roberto Mancini, and this will set them in good stead heading into the Euros. In fact, things can only go up after failing to qualify for the World Cup in 2018. The Italian fans have got to be happy with this. We now welcome in Stevie Nichol and Gab Marcotti to the show. Let's talk about this then, shall we, Gab? A big result here. I suppose we'd have to say that the biggest test for Mancini will become, and that's what he's going to be judged on, in how he does in the Euros, isn't it?
Yeah, and you just had to bring up the fact that Italy chose not to play in the 2018 World Cup by sticking it up against Sweden in the playoffs. But it's 27 games in a row unbeaten now in official matches. And more importantly, we're seeing really, really good performances. I mean, they're playing well. They're fun to watch. They scored four goals. Other games, they only maybe won 1 or 2 nil. But they played equally well. We saw the veteran combination of the back of Bonucci and Chiellini. I'm not sure you're going to see that in every game in the tournament, but, you know, they held up their end of the bargain. I don't think this is a team necessarily, you know, filled with top-to-bottom superstars, except maybe Barella and Verratti, who didn't play today. But there are a lot of players who have a lot of personality, who are very positive, and a manager who encourages them to go forward, to attack, to take risks, and they're growing in confidence every game.
Ciro Mobile on the score sheet. Can he finally translate his domestic form onto the international scene, much maligned with Italy?
I mean, I think he has 13 goals in 46 games for Italy, so it's not a great return for your lead center forward. But, you know, I think his failings with Italy have kind of been magnified by his performance, obviously, in that playoff against Sweden. He is somebody who doesn't just score goals. He does a lot of other things. His finishing may be patchy, even in Serie A. Obviously, he scored a ton of goals. I think he had 36 2 years ago and, you know, has consistently had over 20 goals the last 4 years. But they've also generally come in bunches. If they can get him the service, you know, you have to assume that unless he hits a drought, you know, he'll score. Nobody says he's Lewandowski. But, you know, if you get somebody clear-cut chances, like Italy can do or certainly have done under Mancini, I think he can score. And if he doesn't, they have the poor man's Agüero and Raspadori, as well as the bull, Belotti. So, you know, we have alternatives.
Definitely alternatives there. What did you make of their performance today, Stevie?
Listen, you can only beat what's put in front of you. The truth is the Czech Republic didn't particularly close Italy down, but that's not Italy's fault. And if you stand off Italy, then as they showed in this game, they can pass the ball, the movement's good. You know, when you play in a friendly and your front three all score, then that's fantastic for confidence. So, listen, people need to be wary of Italy. If you stand off Italy, they'll score and create chances. So you have to get in about them. And as Gab said, 20-odd game winning streak, you know, going into a European competition with that behind you breeds confidence. And I'll tell you what, there are not many sides want to play Italy right now.
Yeah, you mentioned actually, Gab, as well, Verratti and Barella. It's obviously very positive in the middle of the park for them, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's more depth to that. There's Locatelli, there's Pellegrini, there's Jorginho, who I know some people are conditioned to not like. But, hey, how many Champions League titles have you won, you know? So, look, I think this is a very different Italy side. In the past, Italy's had great defenders and great strikers and, you know, often like to play on the counterattack. This is an entirely different animal. This is a team who, you know, potentially has an outstanding goalkeeper, although obviously he's got issues off the pitch right now. But it's a team where most of the talent is in the middle of the park. And I think and you have a manager that believes that in the modern game, if you've got talented midfielders, then, you know, you should go out and be proactive and work hard and play on the front foot, because, you know, that's a direction of travel in modern football. And they're doing that. They're getting it done. Up front, there's more to come. We saw Berardi, Insigne had a tremendous game, but you know they still have Chiesa, who came on and who gives you something different as well. So I think there's a really, really good vibe around this team right now. Unless you're superstitious and you want to go back and note that when Italy has won things, it's usually playing awful in all the pre-tournament friendlies and barely qualifying. There's reason to be hopeful, I think.
So are you hopeful, Gab? How do you rate the chances this summer?
I mean, look, are they as talented as France? No. They're not probably not as talented as Belgium either. But, you know, I think every team in this tournament have some issues. And I think on their day, you know, they feel that they can battle with just about anybody. I think the way they've played so far in the approach of this tournament, you know, I think they would be very disappointed if they didn't reach the semifinal. I think that is a good minimum target to consider this a good tournament. And then obviously it also depends, you know, who you lose to and how you play, if indeed you lose. But, you know, the way things have gone, why not?
Can they win it, Stevie?
I think France would need to have some bad days. But after France, then they're, in my opinion, as good as anybody else. They have the same problem that most of the other teams have defensively, and the fact that the centre-backs, they're not particularly deep. But then, 9 teams out of 10 in this competition, they're on the same spot. So Italy's got a chance, absolutely.
OK, well, let's get back to the domestic scene in Italy, where Maurizio Sarri is looking likely to become the manager at Lazio. Just to look at his recent managerial highlights. Obviously, last in action there with Juventus. We know what happened with him at Chelsea. And at Napoli, when he really burst onto the scene and really made a splash. And you wonder what he'd be able to do, Gab, with the pieces that he would have available at a team like Lazio, especially with the philosophy that he plays with. What are your thoughts on this? And what's the latest on it, too?
So the latest is that talks are ongoing. You know, Lazio were a little bit rattled by his wage demands, because, which I think in some ways makes sense, because he made a ton of money at Juve and he made a ton of money at Chelsea. So, you know, he says, I appreciate your Lazio, but this is what I got paid before, and, you know, these are my expectations. So they kind of flirted with other people, Fabio Liverani, Vitor Pereira, but it was no question they were going to go back to talk to Sarri. It looks like they're very, very close to a deal, a two-year deal, with an option to a third, which means that, you know, he'll be getting the money he wants on an annual basis, but it's not going to be guaranteed for 3 years like he would have hoped. If Sarri gets it right, he's a tremendous manager. If he gets it wrong, as some people might say he did at Juventus at Chelsea, well, he can still point to the fact that, you know, he won a Europa League with Chelsea and he won a league title with Juve, which is far from a foregone conclusion, if you recall the way things went that season. So, for me, the main question mark is he's taking over from a guy like Simone Inzaghi, who played a very different brand of football. And so I think there's going to be a big transition for Lazio's players to go and learn Sarri's football. But the good news is he's got very gifted technical players, and those are the players he wants to work with, he likes to work with. So, you know, there is raw material there for him to do good things. But I do think that there's going to be inevitably a transition period because he's so different from Inzaghi.
Yeah, obviously, it'd be great to see Sarri back in action. Unmissable, some would say, as is Extra Time. And Stevie and Gab will be joining us to answer your questions. Make sure you check it out on YouTube.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd Spies, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This from the man at the top at Juve, Andrea Agnelli, saying the Super League was not an attempted coup d'etat. If anything, it was a desperate cry for help against a system which is heading towards insolvency. While the likes of Juve, Real Madrid and Barcelona still seemingly standing firm on their stance here, Gab, so much at stake for them as well. It actually could do them harm. What's the latest?
Well, first of all, it's a cry for help against a system that, just to remind people, he was on the UEFA Executive Committee. He was the president of the European Clubs Association, and European football had two seasons in profit before the pandemic hit. Just to clear that bit up. What's at stake here? I think a lot of posturing is at stake. UEFA have moved forward with their disciplinary action. Maximum punishment could be kicking Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Juventus out of the Champions League. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think their case is strong enough. I think we get thrown out by the Court of Arbitration for Sports. And if it doesn't do that, there's also the injunction from the Madrid court. Longer term, they also have their other case going where they're with this time with the European court, where the three rebel clubs say UEFA is a monopolist. We don't know yet if that case will be heard or not. Right now, it's essentially a standoff, okay, between those three clubs and the institutions. I don't know that they can be punished much further. I don't know if it's anybody's interest in punishing them much further. But remember, at the same time, the Super League company itself has to be dissolved.
How do you see this ending, Gab?
I would like to say that it's going to end with some sort of compromise solution, because I think it's in everybody's interest in terms of getting these three clubs back into the fold, accepting some level of punishment, perhaps stiffer than that, meted out to the other nine clubs. In terms of the European case, if they win it, then you know that would be about as seismic as Bosman. That would basically be saying that UEFA could no longer both be the governing body and the competition organizer in Europe. At that point, we'd have a system much like the one in U.S. sports, where only baseball, of course, has the antitrust exemption.
Thanks so much, Gab. And thanks to you as well, Stevie, for that one. And thanks to all of you for being with us here on ESPN FC. We'll be back again tomorrow with another edition. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray, Stevie Nicol here with you, and Gab Marcotti is also joining us. And let's get straight into your questions. The first one is for Gab. It's from Saif Tamim, who says, Gab, do you think Kylian Mbappe will make the move from PSG to Real Madrid this summer? If so, how much are PSG going to ask for him?
Well, obviously, he only has a year left on his contract. This is the kid who grew up with Real Madrid posters in his room. Obviously, it was Cristiano Ronaldo, who's no longer there. I think it's more likely that we see this move next summer. I think the likeliest outcome is Kylian Mbappe extends his contract with Paris Saint-Germain, possibly with some sort of release clause. So Paris Saint-Germain could still get some money back and he would still have the option of leaving. Clearly Real Madrid feel like they would love to have a huge signing, whether it's Mbappe or Haaland. But I think they may need to wait 12 months to do that.
Would you like to see Mbappe at Real Madrid, Stevie?
I'd like to see him at Liverpool.
I thought you were going to say that.
If you don't mind. You know what, the thing is as well, we're sort of forgetting something. Real Madrid are a little bit of turmoil right now. Ancelotti's gone there. How's this going to work out? Is he still going to be there in 6 months' time?
Well, he's the star whisperer, Stevie.
He's going to have to be, because they need an overhaul. This time next year, they could be floundering. Now, is it likely? Probably not. Yeah. It's a possibility.
All right, very, very funny.
I don't...
Go ahead, Gab.
No, I was just going to say, Stevie, I don't think Real Madrid are getting an overhaul this summer. I think once the pandemic's over, once things settle down, if they were going to go for an overhaul this summer, if they're the funds to do that, I'm not sure they would have brought in Ancelotti to manage them. I think they brought Ancelotti in because they see him as continuation of Zidane's work. Get what you can out of this team, play some youngsters. They brought in Alaba. You got to sort out Varane. They have to sort out Sergio Ramos, make these, some of these big decisions, and then see where we are in a year's time. I think that's the overarching plan. And about Mbappe, so I forgot to say this earlier. Mbappe could extend his deal and he'd still be very expensive a year from now. A year from now, Erling Haaland, his release clause kicks in, and at that point, he's only going to cost you 70, 75 million because of the release clause. And at that point, if you're smart, you can play one guy off the other and then try to at least get one of those two at a reasonable price.
And then maybe all the fans will be arguing over Mbappe and Haaland like they used to, or like they still do with Messi and Ronaldo. Anyway, very, very funny asks. Are there any dark horses that can cause a major upset like when Greece did in 2004 or Denmark in 92? Does the 2014 format make it easier or harder for the lesser teams to make an impact? Stevie, Scotland?
Well, the more games they have to play, the harder it is for somebody like Greece to come from nowhere for a start. So what qualifies as a dark horse? Somebody that's got no chance that you're going to turn around and say, well, if the stars are all aligned, then this team could win. Is that what a dark horse is?
Well, a dark horse, I don't know. Yeah, obviously the stars would have to be aligned, but...
All right, we'll go Scotland then.
Okay, so you're
giving Greece had no chance.
So you give it, okay, exactly.
Greece had no chance. Denmark weren't even in the tournament, and they, from nowhere, I think it was Yugoslavia were banned, and so Denmark got in and won it. So they got no chance. So Scotland's got no chance.
Yeah, so maybe it's
so
them.
Scotland has
what,
to be.
What do you think, Gab? Any dark horses for you?
Yeah, I'm going to take an easy way out. I'm going to define dark horse as somebody who has never won the Euros before, and I will say there is a good chance a dark horse will win it. But of course, that's when I remind you that teams like England and Belgium have never won the Euros before.
That's a nice answer. I like
that's
that one.
Scotland,
I think that was a great
either.
Answer. No, that's true. So there you go. There might be something in
Scotland
it.
Too, yeah.
Jess says, what are the serious options for Donnarumma? I'll put this to you, Gab. There doesn't seem to be any big clubs who need a goalkeeper and have the money.
Yeah, so I think they're realizing this. I think they just pitched way too high. It's one thing when you're negotiating with Milan and, you know, you have an offer of 8 million euros net on the table, which, to put it in pounds per week for those more comfortable, works out to round about 300 grand a week, which would have made you one of the top three, four highest paid goalkeepers in the world. It's one thing, you know, when you're negotiating with that and you're saying, well, you know, I could go to Juve and, you know, they'd give me 10 million euros net a season, and they give me, Mino Raiola, a 15 million euro commission or whatever. But then once you close the door on Milan, and Milan close the door on you because they've signed Mike Maignan, then all of a sudden, Juventus, assuming they were ever interested, remember Juventus, A, have financial issues of their own, and B, would need to shift Wojciech Szczesny, which isn't easy because he's on pretty big money as well, and he has 2 or 3 years left on his contract. Juventus can say, oh, by the way, did we say 10 million? Well, look, now that we're the only people bidding, maybe we can give you 6 million. And you're kind of back to square one. And his difficulty is that all the other top sides in Europe, with a possible exception of Paris Saint-Germain, have a very good goalkeeper who's under a long-term contract and makes a ton of money. And on top of that, there's very good goalkeepers who make a ton of money who could be on the market, like guys like David De Gea, guys like Kepa at Chelsea, their clubs would love to move them on. So he's in a really tough spot that way. If Milan aren't going to take them back, and again, my understanding is Raiola did say, hey, can we revisit this? And Milan so far have said no. Then maybe his option might be signing somewhere for a year or a couple years, take less money, but have a very low release clause so that if he plays well, maybe he can move on. But I think so far it looks as if Mino Raiola, who normally plays these things very well from his perspective, has played this one very, very badly, because he's out there and it's hard to see how he's going to get, you know, a top team without taking a pay cut.
Yeah, and obviously normally ends up with a ton of money for himself and his client. Stevie, Mr. What's in a Name asks, who would you choose as Trent's replacement in the England squad?
Well, it wouldn't be a fullback. Because I think they've got plenty of fullbacks. I think Gareth Southgate's, and for me, is going to either pick Lingard or Ward-Prowse. That's the kind of guy he is. It's all about the team. It's all about the squad. It's all about the camaraderie, which it is. That's important. And so I believe it's going to be one of the players that have already been with them, a Lingard or a Ward-Prowse, and I would suggest he takes a Ward-Prowse.
OK, I'm wearing the right colours for the next question for the old yellow submarine. Villarreal USA, I'll put this to you, Gab. They ask, how far can Gerard Moreno and Pau Torres carry Spain in the Euros?
Well, obviously they'll be carrying them from different ends of the pitch. I run out of superlatives for Gerard Moreno because, you know, he not only scores a ton of goals, and he scored a ton of goals last year, so it's not like it came out of nowhere, but he's also such a fantastic assist man as well. You know, in some ways, there's maybe even a little bit of a parallel with Harry Kane in that, you know, he scores and he sets up others. So I think he can play a big role for Spain, and I think Luis Enrique should have no doubts and say, you know, this is my guy up front, even though it is perhaps a different system in some ways. Pau Torres at the back, you really like what you see. I think it is a big step up. Here we're still talking about a very young man. Spain have certain areas where they're very strong, and they have other areas where I think they have big deficiencies. And when I look at some of the choices that Luis Enrique made, some of the guys he left out, and just even the mere fact that there's not a single Real Madrid player in the squad, not even somebody like Nacho is entirely inoffensive to anybody. You say that, all right, Luis Enrique is going to do things his way. He's a man of conviction. And he's either going to walk away a fool or a king, I think, in this tournament. But he certainly has shown just what a bold manager he is.
How perfect a description for Nacho. Inoffensive to anybody. I think that's very fair. Gab, Safi Sumbal says, were you surprised to see Sterling selected ahead of Bamford and Lingard for the Euros? Bamford scored 17 goals in 38 games, Lingard 9 goals in 16. Sterling scored only 14 times in 49 games. He had a shocker the other night against Chelsea. What was Southgate thinking?
I think he was thinking that we see this all the time. We see very good players who have bad seasons and then suddenly at the end of the season come alive. You can throw whatever numbers you want at me. Sterling is still a more technically gifted player than Bamford and Lingard put together, frankly. Bamford's been a tremendous story. He's done very, very well. But Leeds United play nothing like England. And, you know, you play up front on a team that plays the way Bielsa teams do, and you're a good finisher, you know, you're going to score goals. I look at a guy like Lingard, again, England don't want to be playing the way David Moyes' West Ham played. They want to be playing a different type of football. So I'm not surprised. I think he hopes that, you know, Sterling there can come alive all of a sudden. You know, maybe starts running at people, he beats them, gives you an extra alternative. I think the good news for England is that relative to previous tournaments where, you know, Sterling was pretty much the man or close to it, he certainly isn't going into this tournament. It's not even entirely clear to me that he's going to start. I think that's going to take a lot of the pressure off them. But, you know, look, if it ends up being, you know, I don't know, Rashford, Kane and Jadon Sancho in your front three, that's still pretty good. And then Sterling's just kind of the cherry on top if and when you need him.
What do you think, Stevie, about that?
Oh, I think Southgate's spot on. Yeah, I agree with every single thing that Gab says, which
that's
is not
rarity.
It's a pretty rare thing, that. But
yeah, it
he's
is.
100%. Yeah, I mean,
press record.
Yeah, Bamford. Bamford, having not been in the squad before, it would be a huge thing for him. I don't know whether he would settle anyway. Lingard's, let's be honest, had a good 6 months. And Sterling's had a great 4 years. And he's just gone a little quiet. But he's still effective. So I think he's a no-brainer. I absolutely think Southgate has got this one right.
Yeah. Well, there'll be more Euro talk on tomorrow's show on ESPN FC. Ali and Shaka will be here. We thank Stevie and Gab, so much for joining us. We thank you guys too. Make sure you catch us every day daily on ESPN Plus.